Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
You are listening to the Trek Ranks Podcast, a member of the Tricorder Transmissions Podcast Network. This is episode 14, featuring the top 5 time travel episodes. Welcome, Star Trek fans. I am Jim Morehouse, and I am the host of the Trek Ranks Podcast. And tonight, we have an inverse tachyon pulse aimed directly at the warp core of the Trek Ranks engine room. Because tonight, right here on episode 14 of the Trek Ranks Podcast, we're going old school. We are going OG Trek. This topic, it's been on my list since the very beginning of the first time I ever thought about doing a Trek Ranks podcast. It's been right there on the short list. And you really can't get any more Trek than when you're talking about time travel. So tonight, we're doing a deep dive into our top 5 time travel episodes. All right, so tonight, once again, we are without Jeff Hewlett. So he was traveling this weekend, and the Kima site he was smuggling exploded. And, you know, it was this whole big thing with, like, a temporal displacement. So yeah, he can't be here tonight, but we're going to get him back soon enough at some point. We'll figure that out. So let's meet our guest tonight, who is here tonight. And we have two awesome Trekkies in the house. Our first panelist tonight is a friend of mine and contributor to the great TrekCore website, Mr. Ken Riley. Ken, is your temporal vortex appropriately aligned? Are you there?
I am here. Thank you, Jim. And I've got my subspace armband on. I'm safe to move about the anomaly here. So I think we're going to have a good time tonight.
Oh, we have a Timescape reference. I love that. Could be a preview of somebody's pick. We don't know. Our second guest tonight, I haven't met before today, or maybe we have in some other temporal reality. You know, who knows? But we have a friend in common, Mr. Adam Hunault. I can never say his name right because he's French, who you may remember from a previous episode of Trek Ranks where he helped us break down Voyager's top 5 high-concept episodes. And I've seen her on Twitter, and her Trek Geek flag is flying very high. She is Teresa Jacinho, and she's an assistant editor at the Mary Sue. Teresa, welcome to the Trek Ranks Podcast.
Hey, how are you? Good to be here.
It is awesome to have you on board, and I want to jump right in because I always start with Trek origin stories, so I want to get that from both you guys. So, Teresa, what is your Trek origin story? How'd you get into Star Trek?
Well, flashback. We'll do a little time travel to about 85, because I was about 6.
Good year.
Yeah, 6 or 7, and I'm totally dating myself, and that is okay. But I used to live in New York, and the local WPIX Channel 11 affiliate every year would do a Trek marathon for New Year's Eve and New Year's Day. So my brother, who knew I was into all things space, I was like such a little space nerd. I loved Mars. I loved the solar system. I loved learning all about planets. And he was like, hey, there's this show that you will love. And I was like, okay. So I saw The Trouble with Tribbles is the first episode that I remember vividly watching. And I was sucked in immediately. I was like, bright colors, furry aliens, zapping around the galaxy, I am sold. And then I just got obsessed. And then once TNG was on, it was on. Like, that was my show, and it was took off from there.
That is such a great starting point, Trouble with Tribbles. Mm-hmm. I mean, it doesn't get any more pure than that going back to TOS. Oh, I love it. All right, so, and now you're in LA, right?
I am, yes.
Okay, awesome. So, New York transplant in the SoCal sector. We love it. Mr. Ken, how about you? I don't think I've ever asked you this before.
No, I don't think you have. Well, I'm a little bit younger than the two of you, not by a lot.
I'm old. I'm very old. By the way, I graduated from high school in 85. So, yeah, I'm an old man.
Yes, I liked your Trek Ranks flashback that you shared on Twitter this week. Your first ever ranking.
My movie review from 1980. Yes, that was awesome. All right, go ahead.
All right. So, you know, I was a little too young to catch The Next Generation, at least in the early seasons when it was still airing new episodes. And the first real memory I have of seeing it on television was actually from the season 5 episode, I, Borg. And at the time, you know, I didn't know any backstory. I didn't know who the guy with the tubes coming out of his face was or who this bald guy in his office talking to him was. And I just have this memory of seeing that scene, you know, at the end where, if you know the backstory, you know, Picard talking to Hugh, trying to recreate the whole Locutus thing and trying to work through his emotions there. But I knew nothing, and it was boring as heck to me when I saw it, because I was so confused and I didn't know what to make of this. So I, you know, thought, okay, well, you know, the guy with the tubes in his face seems kind of weird. I'll try to check this out the next time. And there was another episode that aired like 3 days later, and it was the same episode. And then there was another episode that aired 3 days later, and it was the same episode, and I didn't understand it. So I was like 10 years old, and I didn't understand what syndication was. And I lived in a market that actually had about three different stations airing The Next Generation. So I got the same boring episode three times that week. And I somehow decided to check it back the next time, and I guess I kind of got hooked from there. And the first Trek movie I saw in theaters was actually Generations in 94. From then on, I kind of caught up on the back catalog, and well, here we are.
Yeah, you've just caught up on it a little bit, because know you are a Trek expert. And I love that I, Borg is your starting point. That's
it's kind of coming in sideways there at a weird time in the season, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, you can come in anywhere. That's the beauty of it. I, Borg times three, I should say.
That's right. So,
all right. So before we get into our diagnostic cycle, let's do our quick Trek ranks reset, which, as we know, always begins with
infinite diversity.
In infinite combinations.
All right. So if you're joining us for the first time, that was the wise old Vulcan master and a young, angry Tuvok reminding us that at Trek Ranks, we're open to any and all ideas, and there are no wrong answers. That's what we're all about here. So just a reminder that Trek Ranks, it's all about the reasons we love Star Trek. We are not going to be here nitpicking. We're just going to talk about the things that we love, and that's what we love to do. It's literally my favorite thing to do. So, none of our lists are going to be any kind of definitive declaration and arguments or about whose list is better, none of that. So on the, you know, what we do is we use the ranks as a crutch to kind of start our conversation. So that's the Trek ranks bottom line. And we love all Trek here, from TOS to TNG, straight through to Enterprise and the Kelvin timeline. And now we get to include Discovery. It's all fair game on the Trek ranks podcast.
Black alert. Black alert. Black alert. Black alert.
And so with that in mind, that's our great new soundbite from Discovery. Oh my God, I love it.
I love it.
I just want to take a quick moment and remind everybody that Discovery is now in play for selections at any time on Trek Ranks. So that means potential Discovery spoilers are in play too. So just in case you haven't watched yet, I don't think that's going to happen too often, but just want to make sure that that's clear for anybody listening. And I'm also going to, at the start of every episode, just kind of state where we are in the Trek timeline. And right now, we are current through Season 1, Episode 7 of Discovery, which is so cool that we've got Trek back on TV. So, all right, and just one more reminder, we use episodes as our shorthand, but all 13 films are obviously in play for all selections, too. So, Ken, Teresa, any comments? All that makes sense for our background here?
Totally. Didn't realize, actually, that movies were in play, so I might have a couple of extra picks later on that I didn't realize could be in play, so.
Yeah, I forgot to stress that to you, but that's okay, because that just means you got more secondary systems to talk about.
Exactly.
Which we will be doing, so.
And I think this is a great week to record this episode, Jim, since we just got our first time travel episode in Discovery.
I know. I'm going to mention that later, because it's a little bit of a weird consistency that's been happening with Trek Ranks. So, all right. So before we get started, let's have Lieutenant Uhura open up a channel so we can let everyone know how you can contact us.
Hailing frequencies are open.
All right, so for Trek Ranks, you can Trek us out, either one works, on the World Wide Web at TrekRanks.com and at TrekRanks.TricorderTransmissions.com. And if you'd like, you can leave us a message with your own picks. You can do that at 609-512-LLAP. That's 609-512-5527. And I'll give you that number again at the end of the show in case you want to leave a message for us. We'd love to hear from you guys. And I'm sure we have a Facebook too, but I don't really do Facebook, so I'm just going to skip over that. And for those of you enjoying all of our shows here on the Tricorder Transmissions Podcast Network, including Shore Leave and our amazing Disco Trek podcast with Heather Barker, who's just killing it over there. I love listening every week to their recaps. You might be interested in becoming a Patreon of our shows, which you can do at patreon.com/the Tricorder Transmissions. We appreciate the support and the Quatloos. And finally, you can reach me on Twitter at TrekRanks and also at Enterprise Extra. So hopefully we'll hear from you. Because as I say every week, this show is better when we're hearing from you guys. So to wrap it up, Ken, tell everybody kind of how they can get a hold of you.
Well, I don't have much social media of my own, but you can find me and the rest of our team, which sometimes includes you, Jim, which is always great, at TrekCore.com, on Twitter at TrekCore, or at TrekCore on Facebook as well.
Awesome. I love being part of the TrekCore team. The best resource for Trek. All right, and how about you, Teresa? How can people get a hold of you?
Well, you can find me every day over at The Mary Sue. That's themarysue.com. And as far as my personal stuff, I'm on social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, just all at Teresa Giussino. That's TERESA JUSINO. No H in my name, please. My name is not Theresa.
Okay, Thom. I love Thoms when I meet Thoms. That is a great one. Okay, so I think we're ready to have Chief O'Brien fire up a level one diagnostic.
Diagnostic cycle will be complete in 20 seconds.
Okay, so in tonight's diagnostic cycle, we're going to just quickly talk about time travel and what we think of it, I don't know, as a story device and just a part of Trek history. So guys, without getting into your prime directive that guided your picks, just want to hear a little bit about what you think of time travel. Do you like it as a storytelling device? Do you think it's a crutch? Are you just kind of meh? So Teresa, let's start with you. And I also want to hear some of your like non-Trek time travel favorite shows or movies. So what do you got, Teresa?
Totally. I love time travel. That's one of the things I hope that we as humanity actually get around to figuring out if possible. I love it. I think when it's used well, it can really illuminate lots of amazing things about a story and about ourselves. As far as like some favorites, Doctor Who is a huge favorite of mine. I'm a Whovian. Oh, yeah. from the 2005 reboot. I love, first of all, just the fun of it, like just getting to see other time periods and stuff, especially far in the future. I love it when they go to like the 51st century, rather than like going back to see Shakespeare, you know, it's like Shakespeare been there, done that. Like, I want to see what's going to happen. I want to see like the end of time. That's awesome. As far as stuff that I am not crazy about, The Flash came to mind. Generally, I love The Flash. The CW.
The new show.
I love comics, and I generally love the Berlantiverse as a group of shows, especially Supergirl. But The Flash kind of, and both in comics and in the show too, kind of highlights the problems with time travel in that just like ideology, like going back to like fix problems. Going back to change certain things or right wrongs that you perceive, because then you just end up screwing up everything for everyone. Certain things are supposed to happen and you have to learn from them. And right. It's like, I'm sorry your mom died. Lots of people's moms die. Not everybody can have the power to change time around. So like,
I was just going to say, he's just trying to save his mom, Teresa. Jeez. Why are you so mean? Oh man.
Well, no, like, you know, and I get that. And like, but I think part of the, you know, eventually what Barry Allen learns is that, you know, these are experiences that we grow from and learn from. And, you know, so it's like, you know, bad things happen to you, you know, and like, and part of being a hero, if you're talking about superheroes, is being able to take that forward with you as you save others.
Which you see in a lot of Trek episodes where you, I mean, Tapestry is a good example, whether anyone's going to pick that, I don't know. So, okay. And what, Doctor Who has time travel? I don't think I knew that. That was a joke. Okay. Ken, how about you? What, talk about some of your time travel favorites or just your philosophy on how you look at it.
So, yeah, I have to agree with Teresa. I love time travel. It's one of my favorite, sort of story concepts. And for me, you know, the more complicated sort of time travel story, the better, the one you really have to think about and figure out the rules and what affects what, and if the future affects the past, or, you know, all those crazy things, you know. You know, but I do appreciate a story that has consistency and seems to have rules. And that's, you know, I have to agree a little bit with what Teresa said about The Flash. I love the show. But some of the time travel stuff they do also just seems to be whatever they think is going to be cool or strange that week. And it doesn't seem to have much, you know, much logic or as much logic as time travel can have in terms of what changing the past will do to the future or going back in time will, you know, affect this. And so what I like is stuff that really has a clear thought out plan for how the story is handling the conceit of time travel. So, you know, some of the things of, you know, outside of Trek that I really like, you know, shows like Quantum Leap. It's simple and straightforward. You're back in time, you're changing the past, you fix things, you move on to the next one. There's a great series that ran for about a year on ABC called Daybreak that starred Taye Diggs in a time loop as a cop in L.A., sort of like, you know, an action version of Groundhog Day as a cop trying to solve a conspiracy. Right now on NBC, Timeless is a really interesting show, you know, sort of about a sort of half government agency going back and stopping people from changing time. And then films like Time Cop with Jean-Claude Van Damme, Frequency with Jim Caviezel and Dennis Quaid, Denzel Washington and Deja Vu, if you've ever seen that, Tom Cruise, Edge of Tomorrow. And I have to bring up something which I think is probably a sore spot for you, Jim. I love Back to the Future, all three films, including the second one.
No, see, this is where this is going to be my main point. Because so you thought so Back to the Future, I love. It's time travel done perfectly. He goes back in time. You see the effect. It's erasing the photo. There's only one timeline. There can be only one timeline. He's left 1985, gone back in time, and he's interrupted, and he's disappearing because he's interrupted his parents' meeting. Okay, so there's only one timeline. So Back to the Future 2, he leaves 1985 and goes forward in time. He can't be there. This is their rule that they've set up so perfectly in the first one. He's not leaving a time and going to another time zone. There's one timeline here. And it drives me crazy. As soon as he leaves on the DeLorean, he's gone. He's no longer in 1985. So he can't go see his own future based on the awesome story they told in the first episode. And I'm telling you, I was 18 years old going, that, what are they doing? This makes no sense. Anyway, that's –
well, I would say the conceit of that would be that until he does something in his travels that prevents him from returning home at the end, he'll always grow up to be in 2015.
But you're in the DeLorean. He literally leaves.
Oh, that's true.
Like you're watching him on the street disappear. He's not there anymore. So anyway, that's my argument. We can rip on Back to the Future too, but we can't rip on Yesterday's Enterprise. It makes perfect sense. I don't care what Bill Smith says. So okay.
All right. What about you? What are your general thoughts about time travel?
I'm the same. I love time travel, and I think about it in the same way you guys do, or the way you said it, Ken, where the rules are clearly defined. I just love that. To me, the best time travel movie I've ever seen is Looper. It just, I couldn't believe how well they set and define their rules. And if you haven't seen it, go see it.
That's a great choice.
Pretty amazing. Just incredible. So, but there's a lot of them. Edge of Tomorrow is really well done.
I love Edge of Tomorrow.
Yeah, it's great. But I will say that, well, actually, I'm going to save that for my Prime Directive. So, okay, let's check in with Captain Braxton on the Trek Ranks Temporal Prime Directive.
I do not concur with your captain's decision.
She's following our Prime Directive.
Define Prime Directive.
And no, that wasn't Captain Braxton. That was Belana Torres, but I didn't have time to get that sound clip. So anyway, we're moving on to our Prime Directive, and let's just dive into our criteria. So Ken, let's start with you, since you were just going, what's your Prime Directive in breaking down your top five time travel episodes?
All right. So, you know, as you said at the beginning of the show, there's no way I think we can come up with a definitive list of the overall best time travel episodes. There's just so many, right, in the Star Trek franchise. So I sort of limited my choices. I expanded my choices by trying to include anything with any kind of temporal hijinks in the episode, whether or not someone actually travels in time or not. If the episode involves some sort of entity or object or person traveling from one time to another, that's how I made it eligible for my choices.
Okay.
But the second half of that is I limited my selections to episodes that had an impact on storytelling going forward. So, you know, there's plenty of standalone episodes in the franchise about time travel that are great, that everybody loves, but by the next week they never happened or it never mentioned again, right? So going back through the different series, I chose five stories that played somewhat of a, I don't necessarily say critical role, but an important role in storytelling for the series that followed after that episode or film premiered.
All right, so you have a very defined criteria. I love this. This is going to be fascinating, and it's probably a good idea because I found myself kind of that same trap. So how about you, Teresa? Why did you break down your Prime Directive for making your picks?
Yeah, I mean, I started with personal favorites because really it's all about me and that's all I care about.
But the best way to start on Trek Ranks. We love that.
Yeah, but then like I realized that a lot of my picks were from you'll still see in my list, it's very heavy on certain series. So I tried to broaden as much as possible and kind of spread the love between all of the series, at least a little bit. So I tried to think about, like, getting representation for not just, like, one show, but, like, several of the Star Trek shows. And then I, as far as the use of time travel, kind of the same as Ken, I counted just about everything, temporal, you know, like, consciously traveling in time, temporal anomalies, all of that, except holodeck stuff. Like, you know, if they're dressing up in period costume on the holodeck, that doesn't count. But, like, everything else is fair game, as far as I'm concerned, because even if they're not purposely traveling through time or actually going to a different time, there's still the element of that time period having an impact on them and on the story. So that's my deal.
That's a great breakdown. I love the need to be pretty definitive on this this topic because it's so broad in terms of time travel. So, and you know, we talked about it, it's so hard to narrow it down. So one of the things I did right away in compiling my list was, and it's just similar to what you said in your diagnostic, Teresa, was I really wanted to go with like pure time travel where someone's actually, or a group of characters are actually traveling through time and interacting in another time. So I actually kind of eliminated a little bit the temporal displacement or anomalies or the time travel resets or, you know, alternate timelines. I kind of stayed away from those. I don't think any made my list. So yeah, I just went with really big time travel, which is, I mean, as a, and when I, and I looked for franchise impact too, which is something that that Ken said. Mm-hmm. So, and I even considered the mode of time travel a little bit in my picks, just so I, you know, I just really wanted to see people traveling through time. And side note, I love any time there's a time travel and the crew is affected by the time travel, and they try to call a ship or a Starfleet, and it's like, dun, 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 there's no response. So you're going to see like three or four of those in my list. I always love those moments.
That's great. And just to add on to what I had said previously, while I started with a big list based on sort of any kind of sort of temporal funkiness, only one of my episodes, I think, ends outside the lines of what you define for yourself there, Jim. So
interesting.
Four out of the five has true temporal displacement.
Okay, this is going to be
this
good.
Is, yeah,
all right.
These lists are going to be very surprisingly different. I wasn't sure how this is going to go, but like, I think they're going to be very different.
They might be, but you never know about the duplicates here on Trek Rank. So, all right, it's time for the order of things and our old friend, Third Ramadiklon.
I am a Jem'Hadar. He is a Vorta. It is the order of things.
All right, top five time travel episodes. And just a quick reminder, for each pick, we're going to pick our episode, obviously, and then we're also going to reveal our five-word summary and a hashtag to help kind of frame up how we look at that episode. That's our Trek Rank staple. And I feel like we might have some duplicates, but you just never know. So, all right, we are going to get rolling with Ken first and then Teresa and roll through this. So, Ken, what is your number five, top five time travel episode?
All right, my number five episode, my five-word summary is One Night in Old Detroit, hashtag Welcome to Burgerland. That is episode 11 from Enterprise Season 3, Carpenter Street. Ah. That's Daniel's
inspired.
Daniel sending Archer and T'Pol back to Detroit in 2004, which at the time when the episode aired was in fact the future, to stop some rogue Zindi from killing Earth before it had a chance to form space travel.
I love this pick. It is inspired. It was on my short list. It didn't make my secondary systems, but I'm just a huge Leland Orser fan, so I just love every second of him in this episode, and I love when they're ordering fast food. And it's just a fun romp, which Enterprise does pretty well. So
it really is. And you know, when I remember watching it, thinking it was just sort of like, you know, you're in the middle of this whole what we now call the Zindi arc, right? The whole season three storyline for Enterprise, and at the time it seemed just sort of like a little side mission, right? You know, they go back, they solve the problem, they're back on the ship 2 seconds later, like nothing happened, and they move on with their, with the season. But it really comes into play in a big way. You know, at the end of that season, when, you know, Archer's really trying to split up the Zindi and get half the Zindi ranks on his side to save Earth, he uses this, you know, this sort of off books mission that the, Zindi reptilians did to serve as proof that the Zindi were all being lied to by the future spear builders, or that's what they were called. And it really works to turn the tide and ends up really saving Earth in the end. This whole episode, the fact that it happened at all.
It's a big impact. Teresa, what are you, any memories of Carpenter Street?
Actually, not really. I did watch all of Enterprise, but don't remember them very well, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, it's not, and there's no shame in that. It's not an oft-mentioned episode, for sure. I will say, though, Ken, before we move on, that if you don't realize this, I'm pretty sure that the Vulcan Science Directorate has determined that time travel is impossible. So,
well, they say that now. And, you know, okay. I remember at the time watching it, you know, it seemed a little bit, you know, I don't know if I was too excited about the episode when it aired, but watching it now, I really kind of get into it. Not just because, like what you said with Leland Orser and his great, sleazy, slimy guy, the role that he plays, but, you know, you can tell that, you know, Bacula's having some fun, kind of getting out of uniform.
Welcome to Burgerland. How may I serve you today?
I'll have the double super beef, no lettuce.
One double super beef without lettuce, please.
You can make that a triple for only 40 cents extra.
Do it.
double will be fine.
Would you like to make that a combo?
Yeah, fries and a medium root beer.
Will there be anything else today?
A hamburger, ketchup only.
You can make that a double for only 40 cents extra.
No, thank you.
Would you like to make that a combo?
No, no combo.
Will there be anything else today?
Does the Fiesta salad contain animal products?
No, but we can add 3 strips of bacon for only 75 cents more.
Nothing for me, thank you.
Sure.
Quite.
T'Pol's there kind of as his muscle. You know, she's running around Detroit in this great leather jacket, shooting people with their phase pistols and neck-pinching Leland Orser all over the place. It's really a good time.
T'Pol is her muscle. I love it. All right, Teresa, let's move on to your number five pick. What's your first choice?
All right, my number five pick, my five-word summary is just one of Voyager's most harrowing. # Mama said there'd be years like this. It is Year of Hell from Voyager. Messing around with temporal stuff. I picked it because it really highlights that important thing for me about, you know, here's this guy who, because he wants to bring his wife back, he's messing up everyone's life. Like, just everyone. And it, you know, and you can't do that. And then what I love too is that at the end of the episode, you know, where you think he might have learned a lesson and he has his wife back and he's spending time with her the way he should have this whole time. But then you look at his pad on his desk and it's like he's doing research on how to do all this stuff. So it's like, oh, is this all going to happen again? What's going on? It's like, you learned nothing. Great. That's awesome. But
he goes outside to hang out with his
you know,
wife.
That's nice. You know? But it's just great. I mean, there's so much great character stuff. I love kind of Tom Paris and Chakotay when they are, you know, just their relationship and the fact that they both kind of embody the two sides of the argument. And, you know, badass Janeway is badass Janeway. And, you know, it's great. It's one of my favorites.
And Tuvok in this episode. Mm. I just love Tuvok and Janeway in this episode, too. So.
Totally.
Ken, any quick thoughts on Year of Hell, an all-time classic?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, I really enjoy it as a – because it really is the embodiment of the – reset button right at the end. We're right back literally where we started, except, I mean, for the Voyager crew, I'd say. Obviously, what you mentioned with Anorax and all that, that's obviously changed. But it's really this wild, crazy adventure that, you know, the ship's getting torn apart. We, you know, the front of the bridge gets ripped off. Tuvok goes blind. It's just a crazy thing. And it's really wild to watch. And, I remember back when these episodes were actually airing on UPN. It was such a big episode with visual effects and storytelling that UPN actually aired behind the scenes interviews and the making of some of the visual effects during commercial breaks of the episodes, which was really wild for the time, at least for my memory. It's a great 2 hours and it's just a fun episode all the way through.
All right. Well, you know, there's no way we're not ending this segment with Time's Up. Okay. All right. So my number five, that was a Janeway impersonation.
it was amazing.
It was really great, Jim.
All right. Thank you. I needed that that reinforcement. Okay. My number five pick is... I can't believe we have two Enterprise picks in our first round. It is Stormfront from Enterprise, and my five words and a # is satisfying temporal Cold War conclusion, # punch a space Nazi in the nose. And I just, full disclosure, I really love the temporal Cold War. Was it as fully realized as it could have been? Probably not, but I still liked what they tried to do with it, and I thought that, for the most part, it was executed pretty well. So with Stormfront, it's just an all-time guilty pleasure. I just love seeing these characters moving through time into this kind of alternate space Nazi realm in the U.S. And, you know, just when they're thinking they're getting home at the end of the Zindi arc. So I love that. I love that altered past. There's just so much good stuff from the Nazi invasion, you know, whether in the U.S., which is a little prescient right now. That's kind of scary. And then I love this amazing shot of the NX-01 flying over in New York City, firing its phasers at the end. So
that's such a great sequence. You're right.
Yeah, it's really good. And there's so many great character beats. I really like Archer and the character Alicia Travers, who was played by Golden Brooks. So for me, it's just a satisfying, fun conclusion. And I love the cliffhanger in Zero Hour, right? But it's season three, when you just all of a sudden, what's going on? Archer's in World War II and there's space Nazis.
When that episode aired, for those listening who were on the internet at that time, boy, it was insane. Nobody knew what was going on.
I was totally on board. I was like, this is fun. The show is supposed to be fun. So I loved it. Any thoughts, guys?
I would say, you know, it definitely wraps up the Cold War, the temporal Cold War, in a way that, you know, kind of really closes the book on that whole storyline. And I think there were a lot of fans that, you know, were kind of happy to see it go. You know, I don't want to say controversial, but it definitely had, you know, its detractors, people who really kind of weren't into it and were just happy to kind of put it all in the past, so to speak. It's really the close to pretty much Rick Berman and Brandon Braga's run with the franchise too, because that was the start of, you know, the new showrunner in
Manny Coto.
Thank you. Yes, Manny Coto. You know, it's the visual effects are great, and you know they really did a lot of new visual effects work for that opening, from the giant, you know, space factory to, like you said, that great battle sequence over New York City, and even, you know, the alterations to, you know, Washington D.C. And there's that whole sequence of what it was like, a newsreel footage of Hitler in the United States seeing the Statue of Liberty right in the beginning. All that crazy stuff really kind of made it immersive.
We must go on. It must be world anarchy or world order.
That was Winston Churchill. I picked that up half an hour ago.
That's true, then. We're over 200 years in the past.
I've also intercepted several military dispatches and a radio program, something called The Shadow.
We should run a complete diagnostic. Start with the sensor array.
This isn't a damn sensor glitch. We just pulled 350 caliber bullets from the shuttle pod hull. And spare us the official Vulcan position about time travel. We are 200 years in the past. Face it.
But I think it's also the farewell to Daniels too, isn't it? His last appearance in the series after they end the Cold War.
Oh,
yep. Pretty sure it was. Teresa, how about you? Space Nazis?
Yeah, no, I'm kind of a sucker for that. I mean, that's kind of the you know, the gauge is like, let's go back and kill Hitler. Like, that's always the time travel thing. There's something about 1940s period costume that I will always dig forever. It was great. And this is actually one of the episodes of Enterprise that does stand out to me, as opposed to Carpenter Street, which I'm like, wait, that was an episode?
You're gonna go back and rewatch it.
I need to do an Enterprise rewatch for sure.
Yes. All right. So let's move on to round four. And Ken, what is your number four pick?
All right. My number four pick, my five-word summary is just a Starfleet officer again. Hashtag dueling emissaries. That is season four of Deep Space Nine, episode 16, Accession. Mm-hmm. This is where poet Akoram Lan is tossed back into his future, or this Deep Space Nine's present. A poet from 200 years in the past of Bajor before the occupation, claiming to be the real emissary and bringing the old ways of Bajor back. Really controversial in terms of his impact to Sisko, Sisko's happy to give up the role, and then once he sees all the changes that Akoram Lan is bringing to the Bajoran people, even forcing Kira to eventually leave the station to go be a pretty terrible artist, he finally drags him back to the wormhole and sorts out this whole emissary business once and for all, really claiming the role for himself for the rest of the series.
It's such a great deep cut pick. Oh my god, it was on my long list, but I eliminated it. I'll just say this episode, it blew me away. I just think it's awesome, super underrated. But at the end, when you realize at the end, wait, what? The Sisko, he is the emissary, and he wants to be the emissary. This is where the show is going.
Mm-hmm.
That blew me away. I just thought that was so well done.
And you know, if he really didn't solidify his sort of claim as the emissary, his embrace of the role in Bajoran people, you know, you wouldn't have the great episodes down the line like Rapture or The Reckoning or really everything he does at the end of the series in the fire caves. You know, if he wasn't really the emissary and didn't believe it, you know, there's no way he would have ended up going to those lengths and you know, doing what he does there to sort of save everybody at the end of the series.
Yeah, for sure. Teresa, what are your thoughts on
it? I agree. This episode is awesome, and I love me some Deep Space Nine. And I love this episode because he owns being the emissary, because for so long he's so resistant, and one of my favorite things about the show is that push-pull between, you know, the spiritual side of things and you know, the kind of Starfleet science-based, you know, stuff that's going on. And I think it's really cool to see Sisko embrace that side of himself and his destiny. Whether he, you know, regardless of what he actually believes and whatnot, it's like taking on that responsibility is huge. And I love seeing him kind of open up in that way to it.
Yeah, I love that. It was pretty groundbreaking at the time. So I'm pretty sure your guys' Dejaras would be that you're podcasters because you're both killing it right now. So,
and hey, the other great thing about this episode, we get to see Kai Opaka again for the first time in four years, and the last time.
And I am a huge Kai Opaka fan. I love her. All right, Teresa, what's your number four pick?
All right, my number four pick, the five-word summary I've got is, Guinan experiences Tasha Yar FOMO. # getting to know you. This would be yesterday's Enterprise from Next Generation.
It's a classic.
I couldn't resist. And you know, and it is kind of, you know, just an excuse to bring Denise Crosby back. And that's totally okay with me. But I love this because I love that it's so much from Guinan's perspective and that kind of wish that I think, you know, many people have as far as like you hear something, you know, you hear so much about a person that you've never met. And here's your chance to like actually be with them in the flesh and kind of see how they operate. And I love that aspect about it. And I love that it ends with, you know, Guinan talking to, I think, Geordi, and saying, you know, tell me more about her. Like, this is going to impact her and her relationship with the crew, even though she's the only one that knows that this happened. it's going to impact, you know, her relationships with them moving forward. I just thought it was so great.
Then I can't ask them to go back.
You've got to.
Guinan, they will die moments after they return. How can I ask them to sacrifice themselves based solely on your intuition?
I don't know. But I do know that this is a mistake. Every fiber in my being says this is a mistake. I can't explain it to myself, so I can't explain it to you. I only know that I'm right.
Who is to say that this history is any less proper than the other?
I suppose I am.
Not good enough, damn it! Not good enough! I will not ask them to die.
40 billion people have already died. This war is not supposed to be happening. You've got to send those people back to correct this.
And what is the guarantee that if they go back, they will succeed? Every instinct is telling me this is wrong, it is dangerous, it is futile.
We've known each other a long time. You have never known me to impose myself on anyone. Or take a stance based on trivial or whimsical perceptions. This timeline must not be allowed to continue. Now, I've told you what you must do. You have only your trust in me to help you decide to do it.
It's so epic. It's definitely one of my top 10 episodes at TNG Trek Ranks. I absolutely love it. And I love Rachel Garrett, the captain of the scene.
Oh my God.
She's just amazing. I would love to see more stories with her. How about you, Ken? What's your take on it?
Yesterday's Enterprise, you can't go wrong, right? And, you know, I love that it took, at least a whole year until we got to see, you know, the effects of that time travel journey with the appearance of Sela in the Romulan Empire, you know, to these Crosby's alter ego. I think for as standalone and episodic as TNG could be, that was a real big risk, because if you miss that episode, you would have no idea what's going on when Denise Crosby shows up if you only saw Tasha in reruns, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep,
you would be confused out of your mind. And, you know, how well the character of Sela worked in the end, you know, that's a little up for debate. I'm not sure it was totally successful. But I think it definitely had a great impact on opening up the Romulan side of the story for the Next Generation era.
Yeah, it's just an all-time classic, and it is time travel at its most tricky and just best. And in so many ways, you could say it probably shouldn't have worked. But
I just like the story about how essentially it was written over Thanksgiving weekend of that year. You know, they were running behind on scripts, and they had to work through the weekend, and Eric Stillwell and his writing partner just ended up having to work over the holiday and turn it in the week after, and that's what we got.
Yeah, the background of it is pretty amazing how it came together, because everyone thought it was a hot mess, and it ends up being a classic. Okay, so let's finish off round four with my pick, which I'll start with my five words and a hashtag, temporal fun in the LA sun. Hashtag, anyone ever tell you you're a real freakosaurus? I love Future's End. Again, it's kind of a guilty pleasure, but again, it's the crew going somewhere, traveling in time. And this is definitely top 10 in my Voyager Trek ranks, number 6 and 7. It's just so much fun. The setup with Captain Braxton's great, and he comes back in Relativity, so there's a nice little sequel that goes along with this episode. And they get the tone just right, because it's a little bit tricky. It's light and funny, but it's mixed perfectly with some real gravitas, because Henry Starling, that's a badass villain. He's super threatening. He's legitimately a scary villain in terms of what he does to the Doctor.
Every time I try to disable his downlink, he comes up with a new command override.
Starling is using 29th century technology against us. We may not be able to keep up with him.
Inertial dampers are offline. He's gotten into our propulsion systems.
Disengage transporters.
Destabilizing matter stream. Transporters offline.
We've terminated the downlink, Captain, but he got at least 20% of our main computer data files.
Get us back into orbit, and I want a full damage
report.
Captain
Janeway. Henry Starling here.
This is Janeway.
USS Voyager, Intrepid class. Much bigger than I expected, and much less advanced. Says here your ship was launched in the year 2371. You're from the 24th century? And here all this time, I thought you were from the 29th. Looks like I have the home field advantage.
And then in part two, you got those creepy alt-right jerkwads who totally voted for Trump, who are holding B'Elanna and Chakotay prisoner and threatening them. So these guys, there's some heavy stuff mixed perfectly with, I think, a great, you know, Sarah Silverman's amazing. I just love the tone. I love Paris and Tuvok, and I love everything about this episode. Oh, and a special bonus, we get the 29th century mobile emitter out of the deal for the Doctor. So win-win. One of my favorites.
Absolutely. Teresa, you can go ahead and share your thoughts.
No, I mean, I love this episode as well. And I think it's like one of the best Tom Paris episodes, too. I just love him in this. And Sarah Silverman was an awesome guest star. Like, I've never seen her more earnest, I think, since. But yeah, this is...
Oh, Such a good word. She's so earnest in this. It's fantastic.
Yeah, no, I mean, I love this. And you're right. The mobile mobile holo emitter is yep. awesome because that allows so much more to happen with the doctor. And I love the doctor. So this just makes everything better all around.
Yeah, I mean, I really like, you know, what Ed Begley Jr. does with Henry Starling. You know, he's sort of like, you know, now we'd probably call him an evil Steve Jobs, right? You know, he kind of takes over Voyager with his little sonic screwdriver deal. And, you know, we end up getting that classic sequence of Voyager flying over somebody's house and their camcorder recording when Kes and Neelix are watching all the TV feeds. You know, I think that, you know, it gets a lot of that whole sort of mid to late 90s California feel in the episode for sure, since so much of it was shot on location. But, you know, I think I kind of think the sequence where, like you talked about, Jim, where Torres and Chakotay crash and they're captured by those sort of, you know, militia guys. That feels.
I believe I called them creepy alt-right jerkwads.
But, oh, well, yes. Yeah.
Go ahead.
You know, I just remember from that time period for in the real world, just always sort of hearing about, you know, people, you know, stocking up their weapons and forming, you know, militias against the government. You know, that was kind of like a real kind of classic late 90s, like bad guy thing. You know, I think X-Files did an episode or two like that, or was, you know, one of those true crime shows that were happening at the time. So that's the only part that really kind of feels a little bit dated, even though, as you say, some of that is certainly present in, you know, today's society. Just the way it was portrayed, these, you know, guys on the compound in the middle of nowhere totally. Holding the foreigners.
I wish militia felt dated, but I don't know if I can agree with that one.
I mean, the
now.
Whole episode is like, it's very much so 90s it hurts. Like, for all that you're traveling in time, like, if shows in the 90s had a very distinct feel, and this like feels the most 90s.
It's amazing how they just nailed 1996 LA. Oh, wait, they filmed it in 1996.
It's like they want to save on budget. If you want to do a time travel show where you're saving on the budget, you know, just go to the present day. It's great.
That's right.
It's classic. Okay, let's move on to the soup round. Round three, number three pick for Ken. What do you got?
All right. My number three pick, my five-word summary is, you changed all our lives, # red matter. It is Star Trek 2009. It created it's probably the biggest impact of time travel in Star Trek history. It created a whole separate timeline that we've now got three great big feature films, which some may like, some may dislike, some may like some. Jim, I know you are a huge fan of them. Beyond was great. But, you know, it really impacted not just the storytelling of being able to sort of start over in the original series era, but it really expanded the franchise. I mean, I know, Jim, you and I each have talked to how many people where they came into the franchise through those new Kelvin timeline films. Yeah, you know, and it's really expanded what's been possible, and I think made it possible for now Discovery to be happening again with the sort of resurgence in the fan base.
Yeah, part of me, I'm just weeping here in the corner because I'm so happy that somebody yes. picked this as a time travel episode because it's so awesome and it's so epic. And spoiler alert, I didn't pick it because it didn't quite fit my prime directive of going with, like, you know, the crew moving through time, but. Oh, I love this pick. It's an incredible film. It's number three or four on my Trek Ranks films. I just can't get enough of it. Teresa,
yeah,
how about
no,
you?
I love it. And, like, it would have gone on my list if I would have been thinking about the films. I love the 2009 film, and I do love Beyond. Had more trouble with Into Darkness, and Alice Eve needed to put her clothes on, but... You know, but the 2009 and I argued with so many friends about Vulcan, like, and I'm like, you know what? Y'all need to simmer down. No, but no, I love it. I love the reset. And honestly, like, it's what needed to happen for the franchise. Like, I think that if you're going to do a Star Trek movie, you're going to try to, bring in new fans, you have to do something risky like that. Like, you just have to. Otherwise, you know, you're just playing to nostalgia all the time. And this way, it kind of breathes new life into the franchise so that a different group of fans can kind of, you know, get what they want to get out of it, as well as, you know, it's still Kirk, Spock, and McCoy. And you're still getting that dynamic in a different way. So I love it.
Yeah, I totally agree. And the fact that they went into dialogue in saying that the original timeline is still there. Yeah. That's what really sells it, because, you know, even to this day, you know, they were filming 10 years ago in that first movie now, you know, as clear as they were that, you know, the original timeline's still there, you know, there's still some, you know, folks who haven't quite come to terms with that being the fact. And, you know, I think that they, having it spell it out that way kind of, you know, should have resolve the issue.
Like, they know.
Here we are.
Apologies. Yeah.
Oh no, they knew what they were doing with that. Like, they knew they were going to piss off some people, but they also knew, it's like, you know what, we have to do this. And although I have to say, and I'm a huge fan of J.J. Abrams just in general, but it kind of hurts my soul whenever I hear him talk about Star Trek. Like, because
Yeah, but it's okay. See, I always defend it because he's being honest. He's like, hey, I didn't. And when Pete talks about not having an entry point and people rip him for that, I'm like, there's 700 hours. He didn't have an entry point. He didn't know how to get into it. There's like 12 hours of Star Wars, people. That's easy to get into.
Well, I mean, he only had original series that he needed to worry about, but.
It's still 80 hours, and it's still, you know, he just. I get what he talks about. And I am a huge J.J. Abrams fan, too. So
No, and listen, I'm not, like, ripping him for it. I mean, I'm all for being honest about that. But, like, but then he keeps, like, it's, like, there's certain times when I've heard him talk about it as a strength, like, and it can be, but, like, it just seems like he's so much more devoted to Star Wars, and it's so clear, and it's like, dude, just stop talking about it. Just...
Yeah, but it doesn't... I get what you're saying, but it doesn't bother me. I get it. And for anybody who still thinks these movies erase the timeline, I don't know what to say to you. I mean, it can't be any more obvious. So, all right, let's move on. I will say, though, that when I was sitting there the first time watching, I'm like, when's the reset button for Vulcan coming back? Because Vulcan's not gone, right? And then it was like, oh, no, Vulcan's gone. But I'm okay with it. They did a great job telling that story that they chose to tell. All right, Teresa, what's your number three pick?
My number... three pick. Here's my five words and a hashtag. Learn from, don't repeat history. Hashtag sanctuary lives matter. Past tense from Deep Space Nine. And this is where I, you know, get a little bit political, because this to me, I mean, that's why this episode is here, honestly. I thought it was great as far as, you know, doing the thing that sci-fi in general does so well, which is, you know, look at real life issues through a genre lens. And it also emphasizes the point that certain things need to happen in order for us to learn and grow from them. Because there is that temptation to kind of fix it or to help things along or to give, you know, a certain side an advantage. And, you know, the reason why the Bell riots mattered is because they happened and spurred other people to action. And so, you know, without the Bell riots, there's no Federation. There's no, there is a Federation at that point, but,
It's after that.
Yeah, I'm getting all confused.
But it's part of the history of the
of humanity, like
what it took to get to
that
point.
And developing, you know, a place where, or a planet where we don't need money, where we don't need, you know, all of that stuff. That happens because of the events of that, and you know, so it's great, and I love that Sisko and Bashir kind of wrestle with that.
Yeah, I love the way it defines identity for people. It's so important, and it's so prescient at the time, and to now it's still so relative, just that, you know, people need to be seen and heard and not just forgotten and pushed aside. And we're only 7 years away from the Bell riots, 2024, so.
That's enough!
Well, look who we've got here. Way to show initiative, new boy.
take him and throw him back there along with the rest of our guests.
What the hell do you think you're doing?
I think I am making a political statement. Maybe if we're lucky, I might even be able to stage a nice little photo op. I hope that meets with your approval.
Do as he says.
Well, all right. I've waited a long time for this. And I know I won't be disappointed. Ain't that right, new boy?
The name is Bell. Gabriel Bell.
This is an awesome pick. And Ken, what do you think?
Well, I think it's a great, it's a great two-parter too. And it's for some of the littler, the smaller moments too. Like, Clint Howard comes back to the franchise from being Baby Baylock back in the original series. O'Brien and Kira beaming through the different time periods trying to find their colleagues. You know, you've got them in the 60s doing the whole flower child thing with the hippies, and right. Kira trying to explain away her broken nose. And then, you know, there's the whole sequence with kind of Dax being rescued by that rich business guy, which, you know, it kind of plays a little bit odd, but, you know, she finds herself in high society and hacking the global communications network to get the story out. So she has something to do on her side of things. And I have to say, I really like the callback to this two-parter in Little Green Men when Nog's yes. reading up on Earth history. And yes. Sisko's the face of Gabriel Bell in his textbook.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, all humans look alike.
That's right.
Yeah, no, I like that have and have not with Dax and that guy who runs Channel 93 or whatever it is. And I also love that I think they perfectly executed the kind of fun and simple technobabble with like the chronoton particles and the cloak and the Heisenberg compensators and we're back in time. So that's, you don't need to just have some fun technobabble. We don't need to hear anymore.
And that's, this kind of goes back to the, explaining, our feelings about time travel in general. But like for me, I'm less interested in the technological aspects of the time travel and more interested in what it does, like how people use time travel and what purpose it serves and all of that. Like the how of it, we'll figure that out.
Yeah.
And also it's only impossible until it's not. So there you go. We're going to figure it out. We have to.
All right. Well, from one classic, at least in my book, to another classic to close out round three, my number three pick, it's an all-timer. It is City on the Edge of Forever from the original series.
Of course.
My five words in the hashtag are Spock's Discovery Dooms Edith Keeler, and the hashtag is, it's a long one, I am endeavoring, ma'am, to construct a mnemonic memory circuit using stone knives and bearskins.
It's a good thing you're getting those 280 characters on your Twitter soon, Jim.
You just can't not pick it. It's incredible. It's got so much heart. Just so much heart. I love it. And I will go on my normal rant because I always go off on this. There's this false narrative out there that it's taken on this weird life of its own, that somehow this episode is great sci-fi and it's great TV, but it's not great Star Trek. And I could not disagree with that anymore. It's this huge sci-fi concept. It's time travel. It's Kirk and Spock hanging out. They're bantering with each other. There's this big dilemma with, heart and grit and emotion, and it's just pure Star Trek. I just don't get that false narrative. It drives me crazy, so I always rant on it every time I talk about this.
McCoy coming through. Like, it's the classic, like Kirk, Spock, McCoy kind of balance, and, like, the fact that all three of them are so integral to what happens and that they matter so much to each other. Like, that relationship is so clear in this.
Yeah, the performances are just immaculate. It's perfect storytelling. And I cry like a baby every time. Oh, how about you, Ken? What's your take on it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like you said, it's the classic for a reason, right? I mean, it is the story, and it deserves everything positive that's been said about it. You know, sort of branching out from where the episode leaves you, you know, it's interesting that the episode was referenced most recently at New York Comic Con by Kiva Goldsman, one of the producers on Discovery, talking about how the new series is so serialized, right? How the new series is really one season of, you know, one season long movie or one 15-hour episode. And what he referenced was, you know, he referenced City on the Edge of Forever, that if the original series was as serialized as modern television, Kirk would spend 6 episodes sort of dealing with his feelings and the emotions of Edith Keeler's death and everything that time travel story went into him. But I think he kind of sums it all up when he says, let's get the hell out of here, and doesn't look back.
Yeah.
Such a great moment. And I love that reference, because it kind of shows you how good they did it, because even though you don't get that long, drawn-out storytelling in today's modern era of TV, you still feel all that impact. It's all there. It's all on screen. So it's genius. All right, let's move on to round 2. Don't have any duplicates yet, but I will say I can personally guarantee there will be one. So somewhere we have a duplicate.
Dun, dun, dun.
All right.
Have you already been to the future, Jim? Have you already experienced a temporal inversion? No.
This is just a logic problem that I have solved. Okay, Ken, what is your number 2 pick?
All right, my number 2 pick, it's going back to the Gamma Quadrant here. My 5-word summary is 8,000 people no longer exist. # Yedrin Dax. It's season 5's Children of Time.
Oh, wow.
You are killing me. You're killing me. So good.
It's, you know, it's on the surface, again, it seems like a real standalone episode. At the end, all the guest stars were never born and never came into creation. But the whole interaction between the Defiant crew and what we learn are their descendants there on the planet from, you know, the Klingons, some by blood, some by choice, the sons of Moog. You know, Yedrin Dax still carrying the host, the Dax Symbian after, you know, 200 years, to O'Brien finally giving in and seeing that these people, he can't let them die, so he's going to give up his family at home to join the crew and go back and create this society. You know, it really is a powerful story how everyone at first is excited and then kind of terrified, and then they want to run away, and even after they uncover that Yedrin Dax is sort of lying about their chances of escape, they still make the group decision to go back in time and create the society and sacrifice their lives. Except for old wise Odo, who changes the story and finally reveals the big secret that he's been in love with Kira for all these seasons of the show, and she had no idea. How about that?
Your prime directive of picks that change the story, I'm looking at, it's amazing. These picks are phenomenal. And I love this episode. It's like, it's definitely like top 50 on my DS9 list. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to remember, I can't remember who said it, but the line, was it Dax? He said, "They existed if we remember." It just kills me every time. It's such a great time travel episode.
And how angry Kira is at the end at our Odo for something that he had no control over, you know, and then it takes deep into at least the next season before, you know, she starts to really kind of get normal around him again and finally builds up to, you know, the build up to what eventually becomes his way and their whole relationship for the rest of the series.
Such a great point. He had no control over it, but it's him. So it was him, but it's not because of time travel. I love it. All right, Teresa, what do you think?
This is one of my favorites too. And I do love that they, you know, they have to make the decision to let these people go. But then, you know, it's true what Dex says, that it's, you know, these people will live on as long as we remember them. I love that you brought up that quote. And I love, one of my favorite parts of the episode are the new Klingons. The, carrying on Klingon tradition, even though they're not Klingons, you know? And it's, I love that because it goes to show, like, the things that really matter and the things that really last. Like, you know, conflicts come and go, political lines shift, like, borders shift, but things like culture and language and ideals, like, that's what withstands the test of time. So, like, even centuries later, they're still carrying on this tradition of this culture, and it's just beautiful.
I can see the Klingon heart beats strong here.
You honor us with your words. We have tried to live as you taught us to.
We've never plowed fields or milked chattel. We've lived as warriors, hunters.
Last year, I slew a Yarbear 3 meters tall. Your Mechleth was my only weapon. The beast maimed me, and for a time it seemed I would die from my wounds. Now I wish I had. It would have been a warrior's death.
He could have taken his place among the honored dead in Stovokor.
Perhaps he will yet.
No. Ceasing to exist because my parents were never born, that is not a death worthy of Stovokor. Kill me, Worf. I have no enemies to fight, no glory to be won. Give me an honorable death.
Don't make us wait for the end like farm animals waiting for slaughter.
I will come to you tomorrow and do what you ask.
Yeah, and there's the kid who says to Worf, someday I'm going to grow up and be a Klingon too. Or, you know, I'm going to go join him and live off the land and hunt the wild beasts.
It's, and he's so proud. I love how proud Worf is too. Like, he's digging it.
That's true.
So excited. I'm so glad you brought up those Klingons that aren't Klingons, but they're so cool. They represent so well. The writing's so good on this one. I'm pretty sure it was Rene Echeverria wrote that one, but it is a phenomenal, phenomenal episode. Okay, Teresa, what is your number two pick?
Okay, my number two pick. Benny is a human being. Hashtag diversity in sci-fi. It is Far Beyond the Stars on Deep Space Nine. Honestly, this is one of my favorite Star Trek episodes of all time. It only made number two on this list, but in general, this might very well be, you know, my number one, just because it really, I mean, obviously with Deep Space Nine, you have like the first and only, you know, black captain on, you know, in Star Trek, until Burnham gets promoted. which, you know, fingers crossed, someday. The only thing I will accept other than that is if Tilly becomes her boss. But yeah, so like examining things like race is so important for this show. And this really just, Avery Brooks' performance is like ridiculous. It's so good. But also I love that it doesn't only focus on that. Like it focuses on the author that Kira, I forget her name, but like, you know, it focuses on, you know, women and what they were doing in sci-fi at the time. And you know, just the fact that O'Brien is the one that writes the robot fiction and that's what sells and that's really good. It comes at so many different issues really well. And in a fun way, but it's fun and it also is serious when it needs to be. Like, it's not just a fluffy episode. It's time travel and costumes and what have you, but it's like handling it in the best, most like substantive way possible.
Oh, it's heavy and it's real. It's real. I love this episode. You really, I mean, you nailed it with and the performances are so good across the board. Whether it's I love Terry Farrell with her kind of bubbly secretary. She's so good. And you know who I think gives his best Trek performance in this is Cirroc Lofton.
Yes.
Because it's a really interesting
character. He really gets
character.
To loosen up a little bit.
Yeah, and I could actually watch that character's story. It was really cool.
And Michael Dorn, he just got so suave in that episode. I'm sure he loved taking the makeup off, but also like watching him be like the playboy, I'm like, dude, I love it. I love everything about it.
in those great flashy bright blue or bright red suits mm-hmm. he wears. Those are really mm-hmm. great.
Hey, Benny, you want to buy a watch?
Where'd you get that?
I found it. Nice, huh?
Now, Jimmy, you got to turn this around. I wonder you're going to find yourself in some serious trouble.
Anything I can get into, I can get out.
You keep thinking that way. Watch what happens.
Man, why are you always trying to lecture me?
I'm not trying to lecture you, Jimmy. I'm just trying to help.
Now, you want to help me? You can buy this watch. I can use the cash.
Why don't you get a job?
As what? A delivery boy or a dishwasher? No thanks. I like being my own boss. Setting my own hours.
Sounds like a great life.
Yours ain't no better. Writing stories about a bunch of white people living on the moon. Man, who cares about that?
Hey, I'm not doing that anymore. I'm writing about us.
What, colored people on the moon?
Oh, check out next month's issue.
Colored people on the moon. I just might do that. But first, I'm gonna need to raise me some cash.
I mean, it's a game changer, too, in terms of kind of how you look at the series. And, well, maybe it's all just in Benny's mind.
I was just saying to somebody that this is their version of the St. Elsewhere ending.
Yeah, right.
It's true. Yeah, true. And there's that one shot. Yeah, go ahead, Ken.
I think with you know, getting the rest of the cast out of makeup to really shows off what strengths the actors in this show had. I mean, scenes where, Armin Shimerman and Renee Bergeron are going at each other. First, it's just over the stupid donuts, but then it's fighting over getting Benny's story published. Yeah. You've got the sort of in-joke of, Kira and Bashir's alter egos kind of being romantic because, you know, the real life at the time, that's when the two actors were getting together, or maybe they were married at that point. In real life. And then, of course, you got Hertzler with his great drawings of Air Force Station, Deep Space Nine, out in the cosmos.
It's incredible how much they crammed in there, because Cole Meany, too, with his kind of stuttering guy. And then you got both Jeffrey Combs and Mark Alamo playing heavies. And Peters is there, too, preaching. It's incredible what they crammed into this 45 minutes. Absolutely epic.
Now, okay. Let me ask you this. What do you, they revisit this in
Sand, Image 7, of Sand?
Right. Yeah. Where all of a sudden Benny's in a,
Paging Dr. Wyckoff.
That's right.
Paging Dr. Wyckoff.
Casey Biggs, DeMar in there as the Dr. Wyckoff. Now, do you think that changes the impact of Far Beyond the Stars, or do you think that was just simply, you know, the power race trying to play a trick on Cisco?
It's too deep. Yeah. It's too deep. I always thought of it as the latter. I never really thought, you know, Star Trek is in the mind of Benny.
No.
But it's fun to think about.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, Susan. like it's fun to think about. I mean, it's kind of like my headcanon that is the case. But like, you know, as far as actual Trek, I don't believe that's the case. But it's like, regardless, Benny is real. Because I do believe that Benny is Cisco. Like, that's kind of how I always mm-hmm. read that episode, is that Benny is the side of Cisco that is holding on to that wonder, and also that, and remembering, you know, why the struggle is important.
Yeah. And then let me just close, but there's that one, it fits perfectly what you just said, that shot of when he's looking through the blinds and you see his reflection and he's wearing his Starfleet uniform. Benny Russell sees the reflection of Sisko in the in the window. Ah, so good. Just a perfect hour of television and a great pick. Okay, round two. We're going to close it out with my number two pick. It's another all-time Star Trek classic. My five words and a hashtag is subtle, strong, hilarious, smart, perfect, hashtag not your damn whales. And it is my all-time number one favorite Star Trek film, Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home. I love literally everything about this film. The time travel element is done so well, and they just somehow, again, like, this is another one with the tone is just perfect, with the humor and the gravitas of their situation. And just for me, it just works on every level. The There's the time travel is the callback to the naked time, so I like that. The early CGI of the floating heads is a little weird.
Yeah,
it was weird then, and it's weird now. But I don't know. I just the production design on this film. I love the probe. I love everything about this movie. It's hilarious and it's fun. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's a funnier scene in the franchise than when Kirk and Spock are debating if they like Italian.
Yeah, I totally agree. Totally agree.
I mean, the way Shatner and Nimoy just do that quick back and forth in, you know, it can't be more than, you know, 8 seconds. It's just astounding. I mean, they are living and breathing their characters at that time. And it's just so natural and so naturally funny and serious at the same time. And I don't know. It's one of my favorite scenes in all the films.
Yeah, it's legitimately perfect. It is so good. How about you, Teresa? What's your take on
The
Boys'
Home? Oh my
God, I love
it. It's amazing. And honestly, like the I always kind of think of Star Trek III and Star Trek IV as like, I mean, obviously they go right into, you know, each other. But they like those first three Star Trek, or the first four rather, sorry, kind of all fit together for me in one piece. So I think of it as a great, like, end to, like, the first chunk of Star Trek movies. And it's kind of perfect. It kind of ends everything in a very, like, true to the spirit of Star Trek kind of way.
Yeah, that's a perfect summary. All right, let's move. Still no duplicates. Still no duplicates. All right, round one. It's our number one picks for our top five time travel episodes. Ken, what's your number one pick?
All right, so keeping with my theme of impact and, you know, follow through on the story, this episode, before I reveal it, this is the one that's a little bit outside of sort of my initial criteria, but I think it's an extremely important episode for the viewer. And my five words are, this is SETI Alpha 5, # Captain T'Pol. It is episode 8 from season 3 of Enterprise, Twilight.
Interesting.
Yes, it still fits your criteria. I get it. But so, go ahead. This is an awesome pick.
So there's no truly true time travel. No one is being displaced from time, but you know, Archer gets hit with some weird space disease from, you know, one of these temporal anomalies in the Delphic Expanse. And throughout the episode, we finally learn that the only way to cure it is with some sort of space tech that ripples back in time and erases them from ever infecting him. So that's my criteria for how this fit within our time travel theme here this week. And in the end, you know, it never happened, you know. He spends 5 minutes in sickbay and he's good to go. But the vision of the future that this episode gives of what happens if the Zindi win is something that then hangs over the entire rest of the season and really puts a spotlight on why the mission into the Expanse is so vital and important for Archer and the Enterprise crew. You know, not only does it have, I think, probably the best cold open in the franchise with Earth just being destroyed, right? Yep. I mean, that's pretty crazy. Yep. You've got Archer under guard, T'Pol in a Starfleet uniform. You don't know what's going on, and all of a sudden, Earth explodes. And you know, there's just so much to it. Not just the, you know, the really defeated attitude of everyone we see in the future. From, you know, eventually we see him as Captain Trip of the Enterprise, just blandly mentioning that Earth's gone in a conversation, to the desperation of the crew when this Eurydian shows up trailing flocks and really driving the Zindi to the last known human outpost. It's just, you know, there's this air of sadness over the whole crew and the whole everybody we see in the future. And we just, you know, that's what happens if the Zindi win, and, you know, we can't let that happen.
Yeah, it's super impactful. It's in my top five for Enterprise. It is an epic, epic episode, just perfect. I love the way they reset with at the end on this one. How about you, Teresa? What's your Twilight take?
I mean, it's an amazing episode, and I'm a sucker for anything dealing with memory and memory loss, just because it's so, like, I mean, not to get too personal, but, like, you know, I have a lot of, like, Alzheimer's and things like that in my family. So, like, you know, that kind of thing resonates, and it resonated for me in this episode too. Like in the midst of dealing with all of this, you know, the Zindi winning and, you know, humanity being a, you know, shadow of its former self. There's still this man who has an illness, and just the way that is kind of juxtaposed with the major events of the thing is really powerful to me.
And what really gets me is thinking about T'Pol during whatever these 20 years are, having to explain the story every day of how everybody failed, how she screwed up, how Earth got destroyed. And she's stuck doing that. She says at one point she doesn't always go into detail, but I can't, you know, living like that for all those years with that guilt and having to
repeat it. Yeah. That's harrowing.
Yeah.
It's done extremely well. It's definitely one of my all time favorites.
And I have to say a little favorite part is that, you know, we get to see everybody in the future. People have different hair. Reed's got a weird goatee. Everyone's getting gray.
Yeah.
And then Travis just gets killed without any dialogue in the first battle sequence. And he's out of the episode the whole rest of the time.
Oh,
poor Travis.
That's brutal. By the way, great five-word summary. This is SETI Alpha 5. I love it.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right, Teresa, what is your number one time travel episode?
All right. My number one is five-word summary. This is the Trek OTP. Hashtag Team Edith. This is our first repeat. My number one is City on the Edge of Forever.
Duplicate. We have a duplicate. All right.
And, you know, we talked about it a lot already. What I will say, because we didn't really talk about it from this perspective, but, like, because talk about false narratives. You brought that up earlier, Jim, that one of the false narratives that you hear about Trek is that Kirk is a womanizer. And really, like, over the course of the whole original series, like, you know, he's not. Like, every time he engages with they act like he's just having, like, rampant space sex everywhere. And the truth is, every time, like, there's these, like, key relationships that he has. And then whenever he's with some random alien woman, it's always for a reason. And it's the same tactics that, like, a female spy would employ. You know, like, it's any, you know, and you need to get information out of someone. You need to buy yourself time, whatever it is. Like, that's what happens. But Edith Keeler is, like, one of it's the thing I trot out whenever anybody brings up, like, the Kirk womanizing thing. I'm like, no, he likes them smart. He likes them to be activists. He likes them to care about people. Like, this is the kind of woman that Kirk genuinely wants. Like, and I'm like, when you see the love between them in this episode is just like, oh my god, like, why did this have to happen? And I also cry like a baby.
Yeah, well said. The execution of this is so well done. You really feel the impact in him. It's just incredible the way they tell this story in 50 minutes. How about you? What's any more takes on City on the Edge of Forever, Ken?
Well, you know, I think, you know, we've kind of said, really mentioned all the high points of this. And the one thing that always kind of gets me is the fact that Spock understands how much that Kirk gives up when he lets Edith die. You know, he understands, Doctor, right? At the end, he knows what he did. The fact that even Spock was able to say, okay, this was some heavy duty stuff, that tells you how real that connection was between those two.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, a great pick, Teresa. I love your perspective on it, too. That's really, really good. Okay, let's finish it up with my number one pick. And we got another duplicate. We have another duplicate. It is literally one of my all-time favorite episodes that we talked about in round three. It is DS9's Past Tense. My five words in a hashtag is the name's Bell, Gabriel Bell. Hashtag, and I don't like your hat. Yes.
I love it.
Which, yeah, it's just, there's not enough nice things I can say about this episode. I love it so much. You mentioned it before, Bill, all the strong characters and there's, like, all these great performances. Like, I love the guy who plays BC. I love that Clint Howard comes back. I'm a big Bill Smitrovich fan. He was the actor that played the kind of everyday Joe.
That's right.
Who they put it up as the face. I love that scene where they're going to talk to the outside and Sisko says, no, this guy is going to be the face of everybody because he connects. He'll connect with the public out there so they can tell their story. The episode is just a complete wow for me. I just love everything about it. And it's the moment I do remember this in my Trek watching. It was right in the middle of season 3. And it was the moment for me when I just realized, I think DS9 might be my favorite Star Trek ever after I watched that episode. Cause I was just starting to get really good at that point. And it turns out it is my favorite Star Trek ever. So absolutely. Yeah. Phenomenal, phenomenal episode.
Great choice.
What is it, Chief?
They're not there. The entire Earth satellite network is gone.
The space docks? The orbital habitats?
All of it. The Utopia Planitia Yards on Mars? The terraforming stations of Venus? Starfleet headquarters? I'm not detecting a single sign of Starfleet activity anywhere in this sector.
Try non-Federation frequency.
The only subspace signals I'm detecting are from the vicinity of Alpha Centauri, and they're Romulan.
Well, that's impossible.
Do you think Sisko and the others might have somehow altered the timeline?
They must have.
Then why weren't we affected?
I'm not sure. Maybe. Maybe when it exploded, the singularity that polarized the chronoton particles created some kind of subspace bubble around the ship. Isolated it from the changes in the timeline. I'm not sure, but I'll have to run some tests. One thing's for certain. Right now, this ship is all that's left of Starfleet.
So, all right, any more comments on it from you guys?
I think I'm good. I do just want to chime in that Deep Space Nine is also my favorite Trek, completely objectively, taking nostalgia out of the equation, because then it's TNG. but removing that just purely from objective, like, quality storytelling standpoint, gotta love me some Deep Space Nine.
Absolutely. Always one of my favorite questions to get everyone's opinion on their favorite series. So that is great. Okay, so let's jump into some secondary systems. There's a lot of great time travel episodes that we didn't pick, and I mean, God, we can go anywhere. But I love the way, Ken, that you narrowed down your list. So what are your secondary systems picks that you want to throw out there?
So, you know, there were a number of choices, and a lot of them more led towards the, the more standalone type story. But, I didn't have any TNG or Voyager on my list, which was, a little surprising even to me when I finally whittled down. Some of the great standalones on TNG, like, obviously Cause and Effect, right? Obviously A Matter of Time with, Matt Frewer coming in, great, great standalone stories. A DS9 that almost made my pick was Visionary, when O'Brien's bouncing around in time.
That's on my list. Yeah.
Which, it features the only time I think they actually blew up DS9 on the show, even though they undid it. Enterprise is E-squared. I almost had, but, it felt too close to Children of Time in terms of, the descendants and things being erased and that kind of stuff. All Good Things obviously almost made the list. It was probably would have been my number 6 with, Picard revisiting the days of the far point, going into the future.
Classic.
I mean, you can't go wrong with that episode. I mean, no matter when you watch it.
All-time classic.
Yeah. And, from the Voyager side, I almost went with Before and After when Kes is bouncing around in time. But, with my theme of trying to keep with episodes that impact the story, the whole episode ends with Kes being like, I got to tell you all about these Krennan bad guys. And then they meet the Krennan the next season and no one's ever heard of them.
Yeah, but they did carry through the chronoton particle frequency number. So at least they did that.
Yeah, I think they probably used some of the same visual effects shots too.
Yeah, but they had that moment where Seven was like, wait, I know this number. So,
yep.
But that's fair. All right. Any other shout outs?
Not specifically. Although, you know, maybe after we do our secondary systems, I'm interested to see what your bottom of the list time travel episode is.
Oh, we don't talk about that. We don't talk about the episode.
We'll do that in a sound chat, a side chat.
Okay.
That's right.
All right, Teresa, how about you? What's your what are you telling your secondary systems?
Yeah, definitely. We talked about one already, which is the Star Trek 2009 film. Love the Kelvin verse and all of that. But then again, thinking about films, this just popped into my head. But First Contact, because like you know, past tense, I love when time travel happens within events in its own history. You know what I mean? Like you had the Bell riots, which are totally fake, but like it's true in Star Trek universe. And like First Contact, you know, going back to the creation of the warp drive, like that's awesome. And getting to, you know, James Cromwell, who's amazing in this movie, as oh my God, Zaphram. I was like Jebediah. No, it's I was like, what is his really biblical name? Zephram Cochrane. Yes. So that, and then two episodes that I would have included if we had more space was A Piece of the Action from original series. Even though it's not strict time travel, but because it's
right, it's, but fun.
They recreated the 20s,
yeah, recreated
right.
that time period, and it had an effect. Like watching, you know, Spock trying to drive a car was like awesome. And then The Visitor from Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, I was wondering if anybody.
Yeah,
was
that was
that.
Really, really good, and just kind of, you know, again, it's one of those really human stories, like where at the end of the day, it's about like a kid losing his dad, you know, and the impact of that, and it was just so well written. So yeah.
All right, that's awesome. So I'm just gonna run through really quick. I had my on my secondary systems. I broke it up into a couple of categories because. I had Trek 2009 and First Contact. Also, Little Green Men.
Yes.
And All Our Yesterdays, which I love when I love the Spock and McCoy version of that. I don't like the Kirk side so much, but and Trials and Tribulations.
Oh my God,
is so great.
Oh, but yes.
But I know it's kind of this is dumb, but I just didn't think of it as a time travel episode because it. It's not really about the time travel, even though they go somewhere
and
they do travel
so cool.
in time. But so I know it's just it's so great. So then in my so outside of my prime directive, I had my time travel resets, and the one that we haven't mentioned yet. It's an all time great. It's my top five of Voyager, and I love it. And it's time travel, but I didn't pick it because it's just it's not kind of in my prime directive. It's timeless. It's just a perfect
that's true
perfect episode
that is true.
Of Voyager. And then in my temporal anomalies, I had. All the ones that you've mentioned so far. Visionary, I had The Visitor, Timescape, and then I'm going to throw out one at All Good Things in Twilight. One quick shout out to a great Deep Space Nine subtle episode, The Sound of Her Voice. I love the time travel trick.
Time shifting, that's right.
Yeah, the end of that's really clever. So
there is actually one Deep Space Nine episode that I failed to mention that I couldn't really find a place for, so I didn't include her on either of my lists, and that's Wrongs Darker Than Death or Night.
Ooh,
we find out that
that's
Kira's mom shacked up with Dukat during the occupation.
Yeah, intense.
Yeah, that episode's a little intense. Is a good
it's tough to categorize.
All right. So before we end, I'm just going to give a special acknowledgement, because you mentioned it before, Ken, to Magic to Make the Sanest Man Go Mad.
Yes.
Last week's Discovery episode, which turns out was all about time travel. And I was just going to say, so in our last episode, we did Gory Moments.
Mm-hmm.
And I picked that topic before we ever met the tardigrade, which happened a few days later. So it was crazy that as soon as I picked, hey, we're going to do Gory Moments, the next two episodes of Discovery made my list because they had two of the goriest moments in Trek history. And now last week I said, we're going to do time travel. And then 3 days later, I'm watching Make the Sanest Man Go Mad, and there's a great time travel episode on Discovery. So I guess what I'm saying is this pretty much whatever the next episode of Trek Race is going to be, you can count on Discovery being a candidate for selection because it fits right in. So,
all right,
that was awesome. And now it's time to activate our regeneration cycle.
Computer, activate regeneration cycle. Alcoves beta and gamma.
Okay, let's start with a quick recap of everyone's picks. So, Ken, run through your top five here really quick.
All right, my number five was Carpenter Street from Enterprise. My number four was Accession from Deep Space Nine. My number three was the 2009 Star Trek film. My number two was Children of Time from Deep Space Nine. And my number one pick was Enterprise's Twilight.
So that's a great list. You had two Enterprise, two Deep Space Nine, and one Kelvin. I love it. Great breakdown. All right, Teresa, how about recap of your five?
My number five was Year of Hell from Voyager. Four was Yesterday's Enterprise from Next Generation. Three was Past Tense from Deep Space Nine. Two was Far Beyond the Stars from Deep Space Nine. And my number one was City on the Edge of Forever from the original series.
Oh, I love it. And so you had two from Deep Space Nine and then one each from TOS, TNG, and Voyager. So that's a good cross-section there. And then I had Stormfront from Enterprise and Future's End from Voyager as my number four. My number three was City on the Edge of Forever, TOS. My number two, Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home. And my number one, Past Tense from Deep Space Nine. So I had two from TOS and one each from Deep Space Nine, Voyager, and Stormfront. So no TNG for me. The overall stats were no Discovery picks. I love that we say that now because we now have six live-action TV series. Only one from TNG. That is a little bit of a surprise. And one from the Kelvin timeline. So that's cool. Love when they get repped. And then two from Voyager. Also a little bit of a surprise. They had a lot of good time travel. Janeway giving Braxton a hard time. Three from TOS. Three from Enterprise. Enterprise was really representing today. And then five led the way for Deep Space Nine, which is amazing. It really, really is. So, all right. So that's that was way too much fun. But as we do every week, we have once again entered a temporal causality loop. So before we can depart, it's time to hear from you.
The Enterprise has been caught up in a temporal causality loop. And I suspect that something similar may have happened to you.
All right, so our last episode was one of our deep cut specials. It was a super, super fun episode of the top five gory moments in Trek history. And holy crap, there are way more gory moments than you think when you're thinking about Star Trek's 700 total hours of episodes and films. So as always, we had a ton of great feedback, and there was a lot of love for the motion picture transporter accident. And, of course, the slaughtered, disfigured crew on the USS Glenn in Discovery. My God. That we saw just a few weeks back. Yeah, that was brutal. I know, it was so bad. So, those were probably two of the most popular picks, but we got a ton of good feedback. So let me just go through a couple of great picks. Got to start with Trekkie Rick at Nerd Rick on Twitter again. One of his picks with his five words and a hashtag was truly inspired. He picked TNG Schisms, and his five words was Riker mutilated in his sleep. Hashtag horror implied by unknown amputation.
Oh, that's a great pick.
We found when doing this that there's a lot of the best gory moments in Trek were implied or kind of heard because sound was a big factor, and sound can be very creepy. So, all right, another great pick came in from Foz Rotten at FOZ Rotten on Twitter. We loved hearing from Foz this week, who we interact with on Twitter a lot. Thanks for listening, my friend. He was the only one to pick this one, which is Worf impaling Duras. I had forgotten about that when he murdered him in Reunion. And that was gory because that was a shocking moment and literally an iconic moment in Trek history. So that was a great pick. All right, another inspired pick came from at Brandon Mutala, one of our former hosts. He had he was on our show with Adam Hinault that I mentioned with doing the high concept Voyager episodes. He had a genius pick from DS9, The Darkness and the Light. I totally forgot about this. He chose Fala's transporter death, which, if you remember, that's when Dax is going to pick her up on this planet and she beams up and it's just a terrible death. with her smoldering remains. It was very unpleasant, to say the least. So that was a
good choice.
Awesome, awesome pick. And I got to say my favorite pick, and it's my least favorite pick, because I was actually annoyed that he reminded me of this moment, which I had blocked out of my mind. It came from the Borg at Star Trek 1701. It's just a brutal pick. It was his number one. It was from Voyager's episode Cold Fire, where Tuvok's melting face in his eyes when Kes is working on her telekinetic powers. I hate that scene so much. It just really like grosses me out. And his five words in a hashtag were brilliant. His five words was Tuvok's red in the face, hashtag sick burn, which is
just won the internet.
Hilarious. So,
that's great.
Yeah, that one's really, really good. So, all right. So I think, I think that's enough to pull us out of our temporal causality loop. So as always, I want to just thank everyone for listening and all the great feedback. Keep them coming at Trek Ranks to me on Twitter or at Enterprise Extra so we can retweet them. We love hearing from you guys. The show is better when we're getting feedback from you. So please put together your own list of top five time travel episodes and give us a call and tell us your list. It's easy. Call us at the Tricorder Transmissions at 609-512-5527. That's 609-512-LLAP. Hopefully we'll hear from you so you can be featured on the next episode of Trek Ranks. And in the next episode of Trek Ranks, we have a very unique topic for you. I'm super excited about it. So next up, we're doing top five episodes you grew to love. And that basically means it's episodes that when you first watched them, you didn't really like it. You didn't like it much. You didn't connect with it. Maybe you even hated it. Not that we hate any Star Trek, but maybe you did. And then you grew to love it. And now you talk about it and go, I really love this episode. And I think it's going to be really insightful and interesting topic. I know immediately what my number one is, which we'll find out on our next episode. So Ken and Teresa, anything jumping out at you guys that you might immediately include in your top five episodes that you grew to love?
Boy, that's
a hard one. I know, it's a hard one.
Right?
Yeah, something that didn't connect with you early on, but now you think back and go, man, I really love that.
You know what?
This
the very first thing that popped into my head when you said that as a topic was, and now I'm blanking on the title, but Dr. Crusher having sex with a ghost.
Wow.
You know what? Because if I could have sex with a space ghost, I would. I grew to love it because it's such a female story. It's such a, like, you know, it's one of those things where I was just really, when I first saw it, I was like, this is bananas and ridiculous. And then over time, as, you know, like, just kind of how I interpret, and maybe it's because I write for a feminist pop culture site for a living, but just the fact that it was so centered around Beverly Crusher's experience of that, and the fact that it was through her family and her grandmother and, you know, all of that, like all of that just started to really appeal to me, that there was a Star Trek episode like that was so, like, feminine, for lack of a better word. So, yeah, I came to love it.
So, Teresa, you've just proven that this episode is going to be awesome because you just chose several.
And I know everyone will probably hate me, and that's okay. That's fine.
No, people are going to love that. All right, Ken, what about you? Anything jumping out at you?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of have to go with actually, and this, Teresa, your pick inspired me a little bit. I actually have to go with another Beverly Crusher episode, and that's Suspicions. Hmm.
Interesting.
As her, science conference to developing the metaphysic shields. You know, so much of the episode is standing around and talking about stuff, right?
Right.
And there's a couple of visual effects shots. She gets to kick a little butt at the end, which is always fun. But, you know, the first time through, and this is likely probably just, you know, because when it would air, I was, you know, maybe 12 years old. I just kind of thought it was boring. Just, you know, so nothing's really happening. Where's all the cool Star Trek stuff? You know, just a bunch of guys in makeup talking about a dead guy. But watching it now, you know, you really kind of see Crusher's drive to get the truth. She actually goes against Picard for one of the rare times that happens. Nurse O'Gowan gets some fun stuff to do. And you have her blasting a hole in a weird alien's chest. It's really great.
Oh, my God. These picks. I cannot wait for this episode now. That is Suspicions and Sub Rosa. I love it. I'm not going to tell you what mine are. So
we'll have to listen for next week.
Yes, you will. All right. So before we wrap it up, just a huge thanks to Ken Riley of TrekCore, the number one website for all Star Trek. I know you go there because you're listening to this podcast, so you must. Because you're cool. And also to Teresa Jacinho of the excellent Pop Culture Nexus, the Mary Sue. All right, any final thoughts, guys? Hope you had a good time.
Definitely. No, I love this. This is fun. And like, I so rarely get to actually just sit around and chat about Trek for this long. So it's like, I love this. I would happily come back anytime.
Absolutely. I can't agree with you more, Teresa. Jim, this was a great time. And thanks so much for the invite.
I thought this might be a quick episode. I think it might be our longest episode, which we don't care about. If you made it this far.
That's right.
Who cares? Who cares how long this episode is? If you made it this far, we love you. All right. So thanks again for everyone engaging with us here on episode 14 of the Trek Ranks podcast. As always, I just want to close by saying I'm looking forward to standing with you again here in this place where I belong.
Hi there, thanks again for listening. If you're cruising the galaxy looking for even more Trek talk, why not visit our good friends Bill and Dan over at TrekGeeks.com? They've got a great podcast that covers a wide range of Star Trek topics, so you're sure to find something you'll love. And if you're in the mood for some awesome tunes, then you really need to head over to 5YearMission.net. The guys are writing a song for every episode of the original series, and each one is absolutely brilliant. So that's TrekGeeks.com and 5YearMission.net. Check them out today.